play with Larry Bird and Kevin McHale and Robert Parrish. Well, my third year in the league. That was my second year in the league. I was averaging 20 and 10. And we got Larry Bird. Somebody had to take a subservient role. Mm. I remember Bill Fish coming to me, said, he's like, he said, well, it's the first day of practice. He said, do you know who's going to guard the toughest guy every night at the forward position? I'm like, I'm not a fighter. I'm a lover. So he said, it's going to be you every night. If not one night, every night you have to take. So your offense, your productivity is going to go down.
Yeah.
So when you understand that and you have players who are willing to accept that for the betterment of the team, I think that's the same thing. Brown could go someplace and average more points.
Yeah.
All those guys could average more points. Yeah. Tatum could average more points. But because everybody had to take a back seat to winning.
That is Celtic great Cedric Maxwell talking about what it was like when Larry Bird came on the team. Maxwell was a young player at the time, and, you know, he has to guard Larry Bird and make the sacrifice to the team. It's a really great conversation with Cedric about being a two-time NBA champion, finals MVP. I'm a huge Celtics fan, but even if you're not a Celtics fan, and you should be, and if you're not, you're dead to me, it's really a great listen. A really cool conversation with somebody who's been on major, major championship teams. A couple of other random thoughts. I been spending some time at the beach. It's the summer. And here's the deal. If I'm on the beach and you come on the beach and there's about 30 feet of beach on either side of me, why don't you stay within 20 feet of me? You don't need to be within 3 feet of me. I had somebody, they were so close to me on the beach that they're talking on their cell phone and I could hear the person talking to them and the person wasn't on speakerphone. So that's a rule. Okay, that's a life rule. You don't sit so close to somebody you don't know at the beach if your conversation carries and they can hear the person you're talking to and they're not on speakerphone. Okay? Mixed berry pies are a joke. I don't want my berries mixed. If I want blueberry, I want blueberry. Okay? I don't want cherry. My wife buys it and it's just all tart. And the flavors cancel each other out. Let's outlaw those. Okay? Apple, great. Blueberry, great. Cherry, it's like PTSD. Anything cherry, I can't, you know, it tastes like, I think it's because of cough medicine. Never liked cough medicine. You put cherry in something, I think I'm drinking cough medicine. I'm going to throw up on you and it's going to be cherry. Don't use Armor All. Why do you need shiny tires? Do you think people are walking into the parking lot looking at your car and going, man, that is a sweet Mercedes. But look at how dull those tires are. Are you kidding me? I wouldn't drive that car. It needs to be, that needs to have the shiny tires. Okay. This is the one that really, really, really has been bothering me. I texted somebody a happy birthday message. Texted them. Nice text. You know, hey, thinking of you, happy birthday, blah, blah, blah. You know what the response was? And this is somebody that I don't talk to often. Pretty much like twice a year. So send the text. You know what I get back? The thumbs up emoji. That's it. That's it. Really? You're too busy to respond. It's not like I've talked to you every day and you just need a thumbs up. Plus it's a birthday wish. And that's what you're going to do? You're going to give me that's it? That's all I get? Are you that busy? Are we that lazy now? That basically tells me, yeah, I'm completely indifferent to your birthday wishes. I don't want to really engage with you because you're insignificant to me. Well, that is the worst thing. That's like I bake a cake for your birthday. I bring it over with the candles lit. I'm walking up your walkway to your house and all you do is wave and don't let me in. Okay? So stop using the easy emojis. If you want to use the emoji finger to communicate, then I got one back at you. It's called the middle finger. That's my emoji back to your thumbs up emoji. Okay. All right. Well, enjoy Cedric Maxwell. I got that off my chest. I feel a lot better. And follow me at social media there at Paul Mercurio, you know, M-E-C-U-R-I-O, one R in my last name. And got tour days happening and the great past episodes of my podcast, Paul McCartney, Bryan Cranston, Kira Sedgwick, John Meacham. There's something for everybody. Neil deGrasse Tyson. Oh, I just recorded a couple more episodes of Star Talk with Neil deGrasse Tyson as his co-host. So those are coming out shortly. So, all right, enjoy Cedric Maxwell, everybody. Hey, everybody, welcome to the show. I am incredibly excited as a longtime diehard Celtics fan to have this person on my show. I rooted for this guy in person in the Boston Garden. He was the 1981 NBA Finals MVP. He's a two-time NBA champion. Since 2001, he's been part of the Celtics radio broadcast on WBZ. And it's Cedric Maxwell. It's so great to have you on the show.
Well, thank you very much. I do appreciate coming on your show. And the fact that you have Celtic paraphernalia on tells me who you are and what you believe.
Well, you have a book out, which I'm very excited to read. It's called The Banner Year, How Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Brad Stevens persevered to lead the Boston Celtics to a record-breaking 18th title. Really would love to hear your perspective as someone that's sort of on the inside, for lack of a better term, with the Celtics and your perspective being a basketball great. I go back to being a fan when Havlicek played. And we would go to the old garden and it was like a sauna in there and sitting on the second deck and the thing would move when everybody would cheer. Why did you feel like you wanted to write the book? And what are you trying to say in the book?
I think this is my second book. And in this book, I wanted to just talk about Tatum and Brown, how great they were and what Brad Stevens did. Brad Stevens being the architect, but you can't forget Danny Ainge, what he did. Brad Stevens going out and bringing in Kristaps Porzingis. And even when he brought in Kristaps Porzingis, there were some of us who hated to lose Marcus Smart. And there was a show called Living Color back in the day. Yep. And they'd ask you a question on it. And when somebody was asking me about the Brad Stevens trade right now for Marcus Smart, I go, hated it. and it was one of those things, but, you know, Brad saw through, you know, what he wanted for this team. He had a vision.
Yeah.
And was able to put that thing together and to win a championship. And if it hadn't been for Achilles rupture, Tatum having one of the great games in Madison Square Garden history. And then all of a sudden goes down with the Achilles and so much for the season.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you talk about Danny Ainge, and for those listening who aren't maybe diehard Celtics fans. So Danny Ainge was a GM and a great player himself on the championship team with the guys and Bird and McHale. And he was a scrapper. He was almost like not as good on defense, but he was like what Marcus Smart was, I think, in terms of an engine, what was he like? What was it like playing on those teams and the roles that you had and Bird and McHale and the Chief Parrish was kind of quiet, it seemed. And Bird did his basketball talking, although I know he trash talk a lot. Talk about the dynamic with you guys a little bit and who did what on the team to make it such a great team.
Well, I think it was a collective. You know, obviously, you know, I was a holdout. You talked before about John Havlicek. Well, John Havlicek was my first year. And 1977, the year before I got drafted, Celtics got to the Eastern Conference Finals versus Philly. And then I got there and the wheels fell off. We had great players, but they were all older. Yeah. JoJo White was hurt. John Havlicek was his last year. Dave Cowens. We had Sidney Wicks, Curtis Rowe. You just go down the line of people that we had. And we only won 32 games that year. And then I thought it was bad then, but the next year was even worse. The only good thing about it, I guess, was the fact that I was playing more a prominent role and averaged like 20 and 10 that year. And so I was a holdout until Larry Bird came in 1979. And we went from winning 28 games to winning 60 games that year.
Was Heinsohn the coach then? I can't remember.
Heinsohn was the head coach of the team when I got there. He got fired. He got fired probably like 10 games into the season.
Right.
Yeah, so I got a chance to know him. And, you know, Russ, you know, when you play with the Celtics, I mean, as you know, you have your hat on. It's when I got my jersey retired by the Celtics, and I remember saying this, I said, no offense at all to the Hall of Fame in Springfield, but the Hall of Fame is up there in the rafters.
Yeah.
You think about a team that won 8 championships in a row, which will never be done again in team sports with Bill Russell's team. But then you had, you know, then you had JoJo White, and you went from that team to you went to my team with Larry Bird, and then you went to that team to Paul Pierce, and then you go from that team to Brown and Tatum and Brad Stevens, and man, it's a pedigree. It's a pedigree, and it's Red Auerbach said it's a way of life. You're not a Celtic fan; it's a way. Yeah.
Did you feel? I know he wasn't a coach when you played, but he was a GM and running the operation. Did you feel Red Auerbach's presence on the team as a player, and what was that like for you as a player? If you did feel it.
Yeah, I did. I remember Red Auerbach. I had my career high against Kansas City. I scored 35 points. And he walks in the locker room and tells me after the game, you only had 5 points. I was like, damn, what kind of damn math is that? He said, yeah, you had 35, but your man, your guard had 30. So there was a presence and there was a consistency about Red Auerbach.
Yeah.
One thing he said, never fall in love with the product. And that's one thing you look at Brad Stevens. As Marcus Smart got traded, Brad saw an opportunity to go out and get Kristaps Porzingis. And his vision was this team shooting threes and running the floor and defending.
Mm.
And Kristaps fit in unbelievably well.
Oh my God. Yeah. And it's really hard, like you said, when you have a player like Marcus Smart, who's so respected, especially defensively, and like sort of your heart of the team, you know, nobody harder on their sports teams than Boston sports media. And it was just an onslaught. And Drew Holiday was a great pickup too. What I was saying the other day to a friend is I can't believe like we were on a run to do a run here, right? A banner run. And now we're almost in a rebuild like that. And did you think that the trade of Porzingis, and I know you work with the Celtics and for them, but honestly, did you think the trade of Porzingis or Holiday, to me, Holiday, it seemed like a premature trade. Porzingis, I can understand because he's had so many health issues, but take on those trades.
Well, I think the trades were facilitated because of the salary cap. Celtics would have loved to keep, but there were, it was an apron. There's the first apron, then the second apron. Then if you passed the second apron, then you had to pay, I don't know, $50 million or something in luxury tax. So the Celtics had to pare down. If you could, you think about it. The year in during the 80s, when we had Kevin McHale, Cedric Maxwell, Robert Parrish, Dennis Johnson, could you have kept that team together in a salary cap era?
No.
Probably not. No. So I think it is the times which have forced Brad Stevens to make moves that he probably didn't want to make, but he had to make to get this team under the luxury tax. And now that Tatum is hurt, I think you're going to get a chance to see, maybe obviously you're going to see Showcase Brown, but I think you'll see Joe Mazzulla at his best. I think Joe is going to have a great year. But it might be a year that you have to take a step back as a Celtic fan, maybe reboot. Well, this team should be good enough to make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. But if they didn't make the playoffs, you wearing your green hat right now, would you be upset? Because now you're looking at getting a good draft choice and bringing Tatum back and rebooting and starting the thing almost anew.
Yeah, as long as we get a good draft choice. And I think Brad Stevens is a great GM and on par with Danny Ainge. And talk about Danny Ainge for a minute, because it's really Ainge's baby still in terms of all those draft picks that he amassed, right? And the vision that he had.
and talk about that a little bit for a second for folks about like how that led to this current team and to the 18th banner.
Well, it led to people crying when Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett left. I remember Paul Pierce coming back to the Garden for the first time and people went absolutely. I remember there was a young woman who was up in the stands who was just crying. Paul, I mean, just going crazy.
I was at the game. And
I remember going to get her, actually bringing over to the radio booth and talking, and she was just so emotionally torn apart by, you know, Paul Pierce coming back. But it was one of those things where Red Auerbach said you can't fall in love with the product.
But you didn't think they had one more win in them?
Not one more championship run. No, they were, because you can look what happened when they went down to Brooklyn. What happened when KG went down to Brooklyn? I think those guys were Paul Pierce was on. KG was on his last leg. Paul Pierce was on his last leg. So you made a move. You got three first round draft choices, which were unprotected. Mm. They turned out to be, I know one turned out to be Brown, and one turned out to be Tatum. It was the cornerstone to building this team back to where it is now. So now you still have Tatum. You still have Brown. Yeah, Smart is gone, but you have Derek White. I think you still look at Derek White, one of the great picks that Brad was able to make and really change things around. Nobody saw him almost being an all-star. No. I mean, you look at him and Drew Holiday, and I said this before, say it to you now, not a greater defensive combo from the guard position in the history of the Boston Celtics.
Yeah. I hear myself say this, but I don't miss Marcus Smart's defense so much because Drew and talk about how Tatum and Brown, this talk on especially sports radio in Boston, it's like they try to create controversy for ratings or whatever. And it's like
they can't play together.
So why has it, I'm from the inside as a player, as somebody who knows what's going on inside the organization, the conversations with they're having with each other and the coach, what roles have they in their mind adopted in relation to each other? Why have they been able to make it work when everybody was saying it can't work?
Because they made it work and they talked about it openly, for a while that people were, can they play together? And they asked them and they came back with, yeah, we can play together. And when Brown became the MVP, the first person he mentioned was Tatum.
Yeah.
He said, my road dog, my amigo, Jason Tatum, because of that, their love for each other and respect for each other's game. I think that's what's brought them to another level. I happened to play with Larry Bird and Kevin McHale and Robert Parrish. Well, my second year in the league, I was averaging 20 and 10 and we got Larry Bird. Somebody had to take a subservient role. I remember Bill Fish coming to me, said, it's the first day of practice. He said, do you know who's going to guard the toughest guy every night at the forward position? I'm like, I'm not a fighter. I'm a lover. So he said, it's going to be you every night. If not one night, every night you have to take. So your offense, your productivity is going to go down.
Yeah.
So when you understand that and you have players who are willing to accept that for the betterment of the team, I think that's the same thing. Brown could go someplace and average more points.
Yeah.
All those guys could average more points. Yeah. Tatum could average more points. But because everybody had to take a back seat to winning.
Mm. And that's why you have those banners up there. And people sometimes don't realize, they think it's just the stars. And it's like, it's a machine that has to gel. Was Bird hard on you guys in practices or outside off the court if things didn't go well? Was he a vocal off the court kind of guy? I know he let his game do a lot of talking, but
not really. Mm. And people always talk about Larry Bird with his great trash talking. Mm. I'm gonna do a podcast of my own and get a fact check about Larry Bird being this great trash talker because I went through an entire his rookie year in camp. I don't think Larry said one word to me.
Really?
Now, although I was scoring like hell, he never said a word to me during that time. So it missed me when I hear people talk about that. Was Larry vocal? Not really.
He let the coach do that. If you missed assignments in a game, I'm not talking about practice, but like, everybody's got an off day or whatever.
Nobody's like Jordan. Nobody's like Kobe. Right. You know, going to just ream. Larry played his game and he expected you to do the same thing. Play your game.
Right.
So I don't think he would really say that much to anybody.
All right. So listen, I got one other thing I got to talk to you about. Now you're on the inside. I think we're friends now. You got to do me this favor. Too many threes. We're jacking up too many threes. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear about the analytics. We don't make adjustments in the middle of the game when the threes aren't going. Tatum is a complete player now because he started to go downhill when things weren't working on the outside. Too many threes. I need you to get in there. I need you to talk to Joe and fix this.
Well, I think one of the things that happened last year, the year they won it, was the fact that they shot a lot of threes, but they also were very efficient in the paint. And Kristaps Porzingis was one of the most efficient guys in the paint. They will punish you. They will pick and roll, and they put Kristaps in the paint, and he get fouled. He go to the free throw line. They shoot free throws. Mm-hmm. This year, because he was out a lot of the year, I think the game changed for them. They did not have the post presence that they had when Kristaps was around. Now, you think about it, post presence. Al's not the post presence anymore. Al doesn't play in the paint. Jason Tatum doesn't really play in the paint.
He's in amazing shape. He's strong as hell.
Yeah.
He could play the post a bit, you know, the way Magic used to.
What do people do? People look for twos or look for threes? I mean, you and I are on the same page. And analytics, I hate them, but I understand them.
I saw Drew Holiday in a game. I love Drew Holiday. Love him. I saw him in a game this past season. He's like this close to the basket and throws to a corner three. I'm screaming. My wife's like, what are you screaming about? I'm like, just get the two and get back. Like, what are we doing?
I've said that 1,000 times. I've seen Al Horford under the basket with the ball. I've seen Kristaps under the basket with. I've seen these guys right under the rim and they throw to the corner for three.
Can you explain to me, is it because Joe has
analytics? No, this is about Joe. This is how the game is played. My friend, you're in an era of basketball that you go back when you start talking about the Cedric Maxwell teams, the Paul Pierce's team. Those were the teams that did not shoot threes.
Yeah.
Those teams during the championship game against the Houston Rockets in 1981, there were five threes attempted for the entire game. For one entire game.
Really?
Cedric Maxwell, for his career, made one three for his whole career. So the game that we know, that we love, that we advocate, that game has changed. It's no longer there. Great players have to do that. I mean, let's look at some of the players over the past. How does Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, the greatest weapon of basketball, how does his game have to change? People are begging you to take twos so they can take a three now.
Yeah.
They're begging you to take it.
Yeah.
So Hakeem Olajuwon, I played with him my last year.
Yeah.
Unbelievable player. Does he have to change his game to fit into the NBA now? Shooting threes, offensively, unreal in the paint. I mean, Oscar Robertson, all these great players we want to talk about during their time. Kevin McHale. Hell, Kevin McHale wasn't a damn three-point shooter. He shot a couple of them, but he wasn't. Robert Parrish, amazing. One of the top 20, top 50 players of all time. Three-point threat? No.
Yeah, so effective product, though. I mean, it's not as, and this is a legitimate thing that sports commentators have said, it's just not as interesting to watch at times. It's just run down, bang, run down, bang, run down, bang. And the artistry and just the, just, you know, I like that the NBA refs let him play a little bit more this year and getting a little tougher and stuff. But like as a fan, and I know I'm maybe old school, but like I think it's a legitimate complaint. Like it gets a
you
little.
You know what? Get out your wheelchair, Pops, okay? And this is what I said to you, and I talked to Joe Mazzulla about it. Joe said that's one of the problems that you know, Celtic fans have, is that, you know, some of the old guys in the wheelchairs are looking at the game going, oh, my God. Celtics would have never done that. They would have played this way. Well, the game has changed. Yeah, and Jason Tatum and Brown, okay, they're great in the annals of the Celtics right now. Or is Tatum the best player ever to play with the Celtics?
I don't think he's there yet. I have to put Larry Bird.
Okay.
And Bill Russell.
Okay, and Bill Russell. So he's, as I sat down and talked to those guys one time.
Close.
They are going to both be fighting history.
Yeah.
This is the thing about with the Boston Celtics. I've said this before. Not only are you fighting the rest of the league, but you're fighting the history of the Celtics.
But I think that makes them better. I think that the inner competitive drive goes, I'm with the elite franchise, and within this, I want to be the best of the best of the best. And I think that's a good thing, that pressure, don't you?
That could be true, what you're saying, that, you know, because you're with the Celtics, it's a brand. Yeah. It's a way of life. So, yeah, you're on a different level when you play with the Lakers and you play with the Celtics. I hate to talk about the Lakers in that way, but when you play with those two franchises, you're on a different level.
Yeah.
Chicago, for a while, when Jordan was there, they're on a different level. The Knicks, as much as they want to crow around, they haven't won the championship since I was in high school.
Let me tell you something. I live in New York City. Okay, and I'm a Red Sox fan, a Patriot, because I grew up in Rhode Island. If I hear one more person say the greatest arena in the world, the storied Knicks, it's so overrated. It's typical New York. It's as overrated as New York pizza. Okay, period. End of story. End of story.
Okay,
it's over. It's over.
Look. You didn't bring me on your podcast for this. You brought me on because you wanted to vent, and I love it. Look, I'm looking at the people banging on the bus in game six after the Celtics lost. I was there, and people were rocking the bus back and forth, Knicks fans, because they were so hyped because they had finally beaten Boston. Yeah. But they beat Boston with Tatum being undermanned, with Porzingis not playing. So, I mean, you beat not the Celtics that won the championship, but still you beat the world champions and they deserve to crow.
Yeah.
Is it this year for them? I mean, are they the best team right now in the Eastern Conference?
I can't believe they extended Mikal Bridges' contract for that amount of money. I mean, he's a good player, but that's
what did they extend it for? I didn't even see it.
I think it's like $150 million. They for like 3 or 4 years.
Money is not an object anymore in the NBA. And during the '80s, my Celtic team was bought by Harry Mangorian for $13.5 million. That's what the Celtics. And then later on, Wick and his group bought the team for about $365 million.
It just
fast forward. Yeah. Wick sold his portion for $6 billion. Mm-hmm. So the game, as we know it, financially, all these other things have changed completely. In 1986. Yeah, 1984, I was paid about $800,000 a year. I was the 99th highest paid athlete in the world. Right now, that would be called peanuts. They get that at the circus. You go to the Red Sox game and the guy going, peanuts, peanuts, peanuts.
Here. Hey, you got to make a comeback, man, and get back in the NBA.
Oh, God knows, man. I look, this year, I will be in November, I will be 70 years old. What? I'm not even.
Oh my God, I feel old because
you should, my brother, because that doesn't even. Matter of fact, when I look at NBA basketball right now, I see some of the things they do. I'm looking, going, whew, that looks dangerous. That's scary.
It hurt you just watching it.
Just watching some of the things that these guys do. So I appreciate where they're at, their level of talent, but it's a new era. It's a new time. And you and I and a lot of other people I know, we're on the same page when we look at the threes and now they've changed the game. But you want to blame one person? Blame one person. Blame the greatest. Blame the two. I always say when basketball, only two people have changed the game. The history of the NBA. One was Wilt Chamberlain. They changed the rules to fit him in. The other person, Steph Curry.
Yeah.
Not Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
Steph Curry.
Yeah.
Steph Curry's ability to knock down the threes. And that's what you see if you go out in the park. You can see a guy who can't make a two, but he has a sign or in your
to do. Yeah, because I was just going to say that Curry does it with flair. Curry's like boom, and then turns. It's like, you know, it's the thing. So, it's like the whole.
But as I told Dale Curry, Steph's dad, I said, "Your son has destroyed the game. I know." and he said, "There are a lot of." He said this. He said, "There are a lot of shot takers, but not a lot of shot makers."
Yeah.
And that's how the game has changed. And it will never go back. Where we're looking at, oh my God, they're going to do this. And then some of the games, remember, you wouldn't want some of them to go back. You wouldn't want the era of NBA basketball when they were scoring 85 points a game or 90 points a game. So there's going to be some rule changes. And the game is going to change. It's going to be fluid. But I'm just looking for Celtics to, you know, kind of bounce back once Tatum gets back.
Yeah. One last thing before we jump here real quick. Mazzulla has really evolved as a coach over the last few years, I think. Everybody can always improve, especially when you're on the younger end of your trajectory in any job. Where do you think he could improve as a coach?
Well, you put it out there. This is your baby. You've already told me I'm an inside person to go, Joe, stop shooting the threes.
All right.
Go in the paint. Go. So I think Joe's job this year is to be a facilitator, to push this team along, to keep them competitive. Mm. I don't see the talent. You know, a lot of people think pieces are missing when you think about championships. Yeah. When you think about Tatum being out. But I think you keep these guys competitive and you make them better with some of the guys like Charmin, people like that, who are going to be out there. Pritchard, who's going to be busting his ass to get better. So there are a lot of holes and gaps from last year. There are going to be opportunities for guys to play more minutes.
Joe's going to have to be more creative as a coach and more challenge him as a coach, which is going to be a good thing for him in the long run.
Yeah. See, you asked me a question, you answered it. I love you, dude. You're like a wife. You ask me a question, then I say no. And she goes, "What do you mean no?" Well, you asked me a question, I gave you an answer, but then you give me your answer. That's what used to happen when I'm on with Michael Felger. Michael Felger would ask me a question, I would answer it, and it's like, no, that. I said, "My friend, you put that in the answer form. I also call the question, and then I answer." If you want to just tell me, then I can say, well, I can tell you what you think. But if you ask me a question, I always say with somebody, let me answer it. My broadcast partner, same way, Sean Grandy, asked me a question about the 1986 team. He said, "Is this the greatest basketball team ever?" And I said, "No." He said, "Well, you can't say that." I said, you asked me a question. You asked me my opinion. You didn't ask me your opinion.
It's just how Celtics fan debate. That's all. It's just how we debate.
I get it. And then I just said that, and people say, "Well, why you just seem like so jealous of the 1986? I'm not, but I just want the greatest team of all time. I want them to win more than one championship.
Yes, I agree. You can't put them there yet.
So you can't put them there as the greatest team of all time if they only won one championship.
Yeah, it's not there yet. Well, listen, the book is Banner Year, How Jason Tatum, Jalen Brown, and Brad Stevens Persevered to Lead the Boston Celtics to a Record-Breaking Title. I can't thank you enough for being on the show. Good luck with the book. Great job on the broadcast. Great job with the Celtics. I'm very excited to have you on.
You know what this was? This was freaking therapy for you.
Yes.
He showed me the hat. He went to Joe Mazzulla. He said, this is what you want to do. You should feel much better after this freaking broadcast.
I need to send you $200 for therapy.
Is that all they get now?
Yeah. Hey, listen, good luck with the book. Thank you so much for being on. Honor to have you on. Great job being a Celtic. Great job on the broadcast. Cedric Maxwell, everybody.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
There you go. That's Cedric Maxwell. Hope you enjoyed it. Really cool guy. I think I'm getting myself maybe on the floor next time because Cedric and I are buddies now. He doesn't know that we're buddies yet, and he doesn't know that. Anyway, trust me, he'll know. All right. Thanks for checking out the podcast, everybody. Don't forget, follow me at Paul Mercurio, and we will see you next week.